Hi, this is Taps Ron Milioni from the AtlanticParanormalSociety.com, a.k.a. Gizmo Man, and you're listening to GhostlyTalk.com, the best number one radio talk show in the nation.
Founder of the Alternate Realities Center, we'd like to extend a personal invitation to all of the Ghostly Talk audience to come down and visit with us and the people of the past in Upper East Tennessee and Southwest Virginia on any of our 9 different walking tours. You can find out more about us at AppalachianGhostWalk.com, and we hope you're enjoying your time with Ghostly Talk.
Thank you. Dom Valela is a paranormal investigator, parapsychologist, and team leader for the Paranormal Investigation of NYC. He is also the founder of the American Association of Paranormal Research. The AAPR have been together for 3 years and have had many interesting experiences. They are also the representatives for New York for the American Ghost Society. They have appeared on The Late Show with David Letterman. And then in parentheses it says, Rupert and the Ghost Hunters. Isn't Rupert the guy who does, like, the deli downstairs?
I don't know.
Oh, cool. Okay. Dayside on Fox News Channel for Real Life Ghostbusters, or called Real Life Ghostbusters. Countdown with Keith Olbermann, MSNBC, called Real Ghost Hunters. MTV2, HDNet, Telemundo, and several radio internet programs. With us is Dom Valela of Paranormal Investigation of NYC. Welcome, Dom, to Ghostly Talk.
Thank you so much.
It's really great to have you on the show. It's obvious that you've been around for a little while working on this stuff. I have to ask you this, just to get this thing rolling.
Sure.
How is Dave Letterman? I have to.
You know, unfortunately, the experience with Letterman, we didn't actually get to meet Dave.
Mm-hmm.
What they had us do is come in and let us do a little bit of skit with Rupert, and then they gave us 3 hours to investigate the entire Ed Sullivan Theater by ourselves. It was Dave's day off. So, unfortunately, we didn't meet
Letterman. Oh, man. Oh. But you guys were featured on there, though.
Yes, we were.
Well, that's still pretty cool.
That's really cool.
I think if we got the phone call, hey, guys, you want to be on David Letterman? They want to talk about Paranormal Talk Radio. And we'll be like, yeah, okay, let's try it.
Like, which one of the top 10 are we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Top 10 things you'd rather be doing now, or whatever.
Well, Paranormal Investigation in New York City has been together for 3 years. How long have you actually been working in this field?
I started this about 8 years ago, studying parapsychology in any possible way I could. Because as most people know, there's no like exact way to study parapsychology. There's no accredited colleges, but on your own you could do as much as you can, and that's what I did about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I started the team up 3 years ago because I figured I needed to get out there and just kind of put some of my knowledge to use. I put the team together with a couple of people that I knew were very interested and had been kind of studying along with me.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that started about April of 2003, and it's been nonstop ever since we started. I mean, we've got a lot of attention from, like, the very beginning.
Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like it. I mean, I'm looking at, I mean, MTV2 you guys were on, Fox News Channel you were also on. These people, I mean, we talked about David Letterman a little bit. I'm just curious, like, what it was like to maybe go to some of these other experiences you guys have had with the media like this.
Well, what it all started as was we were approached by a reporter from the Daily News that really wanted to do a story on us, and we assumed it was going to be a little blurb in the Daily News. It turned out to be a half-page article in the New York Daily News, which gave us probably way more attention than we could possibly handle in a week.
Yeah.
From that, it snowballed. It went right from that to everything else. That's how we got the Dayside. That's how we got the MSNBC. They all pretty much saw the article, and from there. And originally, and the same thing with Letterman, they just contacted us one day and said, would you like to come down and investigate the Ed Sullivan Theater? Like, what investigator in their right mind would say no?
Well, exactly. That's amazing.
Me and three other guys canceled every plan we had. You know, and it didn't matter what we were doing. We're like, okay, yeah, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. We're not going to pass down the Ed Sullivan Theater. So.
No, you can't. That would be ridiculous not to do that. But you guys have been all over the place. It's just amazing. I mean, I was going through this, and we were writing this all up, and I'm like, wow, these guys have been all over the place as far as just presenting their work to all these different type of media conglomerates.
So how many folks are there that you hunt with normally or work with normally?
Okay, we have a team of 10, but on the average investigation, it's either 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
I like keeping 10 members because just in case certain people can't make it, you always have backup people. So you're never stuck with just 1 or 2 investigators. Plus, we have different people in the group who have different specialties. So on certain investigations, you need certain people for that.
Okay, yeah. Well, it sounds like you follow the same philosophy we do. Generally, you try to only have at a max 5 or 6 people out on an investigation. Any more than that, it starts to get a little messy, I think.
Exactly. You start stepping on each other's toes. It gets a little bit crazy. Unless you have a gigantic investigation, which I think the biggest one we had so far was the Willoughby House in Newburgh, New York, which is... I'll go into this story because it's a really interesting story.
Okay.
The house is probably about 150 years old, started out as a sanitarium, and then somewhere in the 1950s it turned over to a funeral home. So from 1950 to probably about 2004, it was a funeral home. And in 2004, a man bought it for his home.
Mm-hmm.
In the basement, there's still an embalming room.
Oh my God.
Oh, you guys, while you're telling the story,
sure.
This place is just absolutely incredible. There's pictures up on your website at www.paranormal-nyc.com. So, folks, go over there and take a peek.
Right, and this, I mean, the house itself is beautiful, and it's true. I think we have a couple pictures up there of the embalming room. But we were called in because you could imagine just a place like that, the energy alone in that building.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner, as soon as he moved in, believed the place was haunted. So he called us, and I think we went there with 8 investigators. It's a small mansion. It's gigantic. And all of us went in there with all our gear, and we kind of split up. There was 3 floors, so we kind of did 2 or 3, you know, investigators per floor. And one of my other investigators, Dan and Amara, both went out to the embalming room in the basement. And while they were sitting there, it was just kind of like, with the lights out, they put a little cassette recorder on a gurney, an actual metal gurney that was still there.
Oh, wow.
And they were actually asking questions, and all of a sudden the tape of the cassette ran out and it made this big pop and rattled everything on the gurney. Both of them jumped and started screaming. And so the rest of us are like, what just happened? We run downstairs thinking something wonderful happened, and it turned out they were just so frightened just by being down there.
Well, yeah.
That's a good test
of nerve.
Yeah.
We also, too, though, MSNBC and Telemundo came down the same day at that house, at the Willoughby house, to video us doing an investigation. And I didn't put this on the website yet because we're still analyzing it, because we're not 100% sure it is what they claim it is, too. But there's a part where we're all leaving, and we usually leave our gear all set up, and then we'll just leave to go out for a little bit to leave the house quiet to see if we could pick up anything going on when maybe people are not there. While we were gone, as we were leaving, the owner of the house walks back in and asks, is there anybody still in the house? And as he's leaving, you hear a scream.
Ah.
Now, this is wonderful because the way the houses are situated, they're too far away from each other that you would hear a neighbor scream. We were all standing in the front of the house, so we know it wasn't coming from directly there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a catch to it. As he's walking into the door, you also see the screen door closing at the same time. We're not 100% sure it's not the door closing that's making that sound, but it sounds too human to be a door.
Mm-hmm.
So we drove the 2-hour ride back up there last weekend just to see if it was the door or not. And although the door does squeak, doesn't make the same sound.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that we can't say, yeah, we're 100% sure, but we're kind of leaning towards it probably wasn't the door.
Okay. It sounds very interesting, though. I mean, I know, well, a scream and a door squeaking, I don't know. I guess you have
to... It depends.
Well, it depends. I mean, yeah. How big was the door, for example? This is an older house. I imagine it's a pretty big door, right, Dom?
It's actually a standard screen door, because I think they put in new doors for the house when he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not even, like, extremely old doors. And it, like I said, it does make kind of a sound, but not, if you compare the 2 sounds, they're not really. But you know what, though? The reason it's not on our website, because as soon as we put it up there, people would tear us to shreds saying, it's the door, it's the door. So we kind of learned our lesson about putting things up like that.
Yeah. Well, that question of evidence like that, I mean, we said it a million times here on the show. I mean, that evidence you get, I mean, that's your evidence.
Right.
It means something to you, right? I mean, you were there, you experienced it. You record it, you took the picture of it, whatever, and, you know, we've seen a million photos where there's something there in the frame, and the person swears up and down that, okay, look, there was nothing there when I took this picture, and now all of a sudden there's this misty thing or something there. I don't get it. So it really becomes a personal thing, and like you just said, in posting something like that up on your site right now, when you can't back anything up just yet, it would be kind of hard to deal with that. We've been through it ourselves, so we know.
I mean, people also say to me, too, though, how come your photos page doesn't have a lot of photos? Because the reason why, it's really difficult. Even some of the photos we have on there, we just to have sometimes a couple photos up there,
mm-hmm.
not because we feel like this is your perfect evidence, because there's a lot that we come across that we feel like unless not everybody, because you're never going to satisfy everybody, but at least of the majority of people are going to turn around and say, that looks like something there.
I mean,
we do the same thing with EVPs. I think we only have 1 EVP posted on our website,
mm-hmm.
which is another interesting story I'll get into
okay.
in a little bit. But getting back to the website, there's a lot of sites out there. And I know, there's other investigators out there in different states and, you know, different cities, that it's almost like a battle between, which to me I kind of don't understand. I think we should all be working together. But I do understand, like, I think more than anybody else, another paranormal investigator is going to scrutinize another person's work.
Mm-hmm.
But in a good way sometimes. I think it keeps us on our toes, too.
Well, a healthy discussion, a healthy debate is always a great thing. And it seems like, boy, you know, it's funny you brought that up, because I've been hearing...
This is a recurring theme.
A lot lately, Dom. I mean, we were just at the Eastern Regional Paranormal Conference last weekend. I can name off, well, I'm not going to name them off, but I can say at least five people I talked to, like, in that one day were like, I just wish people would get along, for God's sake, I'm tired of this stuff, you know? I mean, we're supposed to be having fun sometimes here, too, and really exploring exploring this field and trying to understand what we're doing out there. But it seems like there are people, like you said, there's a fine line. I mean, there's a fine line between healthy scrutiny, like you said, and somebody just outright lambasting you, I guess. And we've seen both sides of the coin. And it's unfortunate. I wish people wouldn't work together more. It sounds like you guys are having the same stuff in your area, too.
It seemed, I mean, the odd thing about it, and you would think it would be different here, but we are technically the biggest team in New York City. We actually, for the past 2 years, have been the only team in New York City up until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And now even the teams that start out in New York City are much, much smaller, and they're more like kind of like Yahoo sites. They're not like, you know, big organizations or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've had New York City to ourselves for almost 3 years now,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting, though, because you don't have kind of that interstate competition. Like in New Jersey, our neighbor, there's quite a few teams
mm-hmm.
that, you know, even amongst each other, you know, they're almost competing against each other. We don't really have that competition. But, I mean, to me, I always enjoy hearing what other investigators have to say, because I always felt like the whole paranormal phenomena is something that nobody has all the answers to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hear another person's opinion, they might teach you something you didn't know in the past.
Well,
I think everybody brings something to the table when it comes to this.
That's what it's all about right there, Dom, I thought.
Well, it has to be. I would think, though, or else we're all wasting our time.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we've shown evidence to people, and evidence, I think, is pretty, you know, pretty eerie, let's just say, some stuff that we've recorded or whatever. And, I mean, we've had a group of people over here that said, wow, that is amazing. You know, wow, that's really trippy. And then I've had a few people on the same, you know, with the same piece of evidence go, man, it sounds like somebody recorded something on top of that. I don't know. And I mean, I will be completely honest with you. I've always taken both sides of that, like the skeptical side and the believing side, and said, wow, thanks for your opinion. It's really cool. It's a good way to look at it. I'm really gonna take that into account here too.
Well, there are people out there, though, who do go a little bit overboard sometimes.
Well, yeah.
And we've fallen victim to that as well. But, you know, I've been encouraged lately, Dom. I get down too sometimes, I've been encouraged, though, because we just went to a string of successful conferences.
Yeah.
Where we got to meet tons of ghost hunters and paranormal enthusiasts from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We got to listen to experts and authors and people who are out there, you know, doing the work, and people who are writing about the work, and people who are doing both, and there really is an amazing active community of folks who I think do want to get along,
mm-hmm.
and do want to really get, you know, dig in and share their evidence and dig into to doing more work.
Yeah.
So I've been encouraged lately. For example, you've got an opportunity, because coming up, the big Mid-South Paranormal Convention is still coming up this year. There's those conventions. Have you ever thought of going to conventions?
Well, the thing about it is also Troy Taylor. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Troy Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Troy Taylor is actually one of my former teachers. I've been dealing with Troy Taylor for years. When Troy Taylor years ago was part of Flamel College, him and Dennis Hawk,
mm-hmm.
That's like going back years when I even started, you know, school through them. I usually get things through him. There's never usually anything. I think Chicago is usually the closest one that have been towards, you know, close to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, if anything ever happened in Pennsylvania or around New York, I would definitely go. It's just difficult for me to get out of the state.
Oh yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
it's been some very interesting weekends as far as like driving and sleep depth's concerned.
Yeah,
it really takes a toll on your body after a while.
Oh, what about 2000? Troy's having the big.
2006 though, the American Ghost.
No, 2007.
Oh yeah, 2007.
He's having a huge conference next year.
We're just trying to get you out there, Don, because we want to meet you.
Yeah, we want to meet you.
I mean, that one, I'll tell you the truth, though, I've been looking forward to that, too. And I always said if I could ever possibly make that one, that would be the one I would try to make more than anything.
Troy is really the first time we met Troy was just last weekend, as a matter of fact. We've had him on the show before, and it was a funny day because we're like, that's Troy Taylor over there. Oh,
quick hide.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's Troy Taylor.
He's like a celebrity now. Troy Taylor's the guy, you know?
He's amazing.
Well, it was great because we were both so – he was on the opposite side of the room as us, right? And we were both so busy all day long. We're at our table doing our thing. He's at his table doing a lot more things than we are probably. And, you know, he'd see us and come by and we'd give each other a friendly nod. But for the whole day almost, we didn't have a chance to actually go, hey, what's happening? Shake hands, go, hey, it's finally great to meet you. Finally, I just went out and grabbed him and said, Troy, we want to talk to you because we had our equipment there and stuff, right? And he's like, it's so weird. We've been so busy all day long. We haven't had a chance to even talk. This has been like waiting to happen for like 3 years, right? We're like, yeah. He's like, you think it would be easier for us to get together? I'm like, well, you know, it's cool. But we finally got him on, though. It was totally great. He's just the nicest guy.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, one thing about Troy Taylor, that's what I always loved about him. He's the guy you could have hours of conversations with, and he never, ever will say a bad word about another team, will never say a bad, and he'll always take everybody's opinion. He'll never shoot down anybody's opinion. Mm. I always felt like he's one of the few people out there that was, to me, one of the great guys.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great guy, like, you know, he's very knowledgeable, his books are great.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about Troy, I always enjoy dealing with him.
And he's got a lot of experience, too. That's a big thing for me.
And I know, and he's a young guy with a whole lot of experience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was really great to see him speak. So, yeah, you were actually trained by him, though, you said.
Yes, I was.
How do you...
I mean, I've had different teachers in my lifetime. Troy Taylor was one of them. Dennis Hawk was another one.
Uh-huh.
I also learned from a couple parapsychologists. I mean, one parapsychologist called Jeffrey Mishlove played a big role into starting me out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first started out, I was so interested in parapsychology, going crazy looking for a college that I could actually take classes of parapsychology. And in the United States, there aren't any. So I kept emailing people left and right who were in the field, and the only person who ever answered me back was Jeffrey Mishlove.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know what? It's... because he technically has the only PhD in parapsychology in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know what you could do? I have a bunch of, you know, courses that when I was teaching that I taught in college and everything, I will give you these non-credit, but I'll just hand them over to you, and you could do them any way you want them.
Oh,
so he emailed
wow.
me all this information, and for months and months and months I was doing these courses,
mm-hmm.
Which to me I felt like I got more out of than anything else. But that really triggered me more than anything to learn more, because it was not only parapsychology, but it was also consciousness studies, theology. The course was well-rounded.
Yeah,
so it definitely opened my mind to a lot of different things that I didn't know before.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, I'd love to be able to get a course like that, just be able to sit down there. Well, I mean, sit down there and do it. There are no classes, though, yet. I'm hoping that maybe down the road there may be.
I know, if Macomb Community College would start one.
Oh,
know,
like, yeah, I mean,
all right,
yeah.
Here's my $180.
Yeah, I'm going. I'm going back to college, man. All right, cool.
You guys are familiar with Flamel College, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Flamel College?
Yeah.
Right. They still have, the certification courses, which they've changed a little bit. I mean, in my opinion, I don't want to ever bash that school because I love them. They were really great to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the courses have changed a little bit since Troy Taylor stopped teaching one of the courses.
Mm-hmm.
But Troy Taylor himself has a course, too, that's a very good course for people out there who are really interested in paranormal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he still teaches on his site. And the parapsychology course in Flamel College is still a good basic course. So for a lot of people out there, if they're interested in knowing more, there's another fairly good school out there.
Well, that's really
true.
And so there are resources like that, then. I mean, there's not a lot yet.
Yeah, you can't get a degree or a, you know, anything.
Well, and a lot of people ask me, they're like, well, what would you recommend? Like, if somebody really wanted to get into the field, and I was like, well, if you really want to get into the field, you got to get either into psychology or physics.
Mm.
And in that way, but how many people are going to get their PhD in physics and psychology and become a parapsychologist?
Yeah.
Going from something they can make a fortune from to making something they can make absolutely nothing from.
Well, yeah, and that's why I think that's the issue right now, and... I mean, we've talked about, there's a lot of certification courses out there. There's groups out there that will give you your own EVP, you're a certified EVP expert, you know,
right.
for $200. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, that's kind of where I get, okay, I'd love to see a course put together on something like this, but at the same time, you know, really, I mean, you're going to learn theory. That's what you're going to learn about the whole thing. You're going to learn theory, where you can actually, in my opinion, we see it every week. People add their own ideas to this body of information that's all out there on the paranormal. So,
well, the good thing about the course is it gives a lot of people who have no knowledge some knowledge, and then, of course, we all do this. Like, we learn as we go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about when you guys first started, same thing as me. You probably went out there with a camera and a really cheap EMF detector, and by now, you know, we probably all upgraded to really good cameras and really great EMF detectors.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
We know the difference between, you learn with time, we all do. We learn what, you know, and think about all the gadgets in the beginning you probably spent a lot of money on, and that is probably sitting somewhere in your house that you'll never use.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just talking about that, of how much gear I bought when we first started the group, probably a couple $1,000 worth of equipment,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out that half of it we don't use,
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of like you wonder, you know, you read things and they're like, you see what other teams are doing and you get the idea, well, this might work, and you try it and it doesn't really work for you.
Yeah.
But then, like, we are trying certain, even like things that we feel like may, for our opinion, may maybe show something that maybe other teams haven't started. What we do, too, is we have these plates of just kind of a metal, just shrap metal, that are in plastic plates.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can get them from emfless.com. And all we do is we leave them around, because we figured also if there's a change in electromagnetic frequency, it'll move. You know, it'll kind of disperse the shrap metal. So they're good to kind of just lay around and take pictures of before,
uh-huh.
and then you see at the end of the investigation if they disperse the shrap metal. It's kind of a, maybe in our opinion, having a little tiny EMF detector in every room.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea, yeah.
In case a field walks by.
Well, that's the idea right there. I mean, and like you just said, I mean, we are, you're completely right, Dom. When we started out, we really didn't have, like, any, there wasn't too many resources out there to kind of tell you, or other groups, let's say, to tell you, oh, you know, you might want to try this. Save your money and try something like this. We kind of learned as we went along, like you said. That's why I think there's a lot more resources now, whether they're educational or they're just guidelines to go by, that can help people out a lot more now and save them a lot of money that we spent. Just say that. That's really important, I think, for people that are just starting out now. They should know what tools they could use out there that might produce better results.
I mean, I always wondered. I always ask other investigators when I speak to them, like, to you, what's your most valuable piece of equipment? To you, the one piece of equipment you cannot do without?
Oh, well, obviously, for me, both of us are digital recorders, because we're both EVP junkies.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to say the same thing, because the thing about it is, with a digital recorder, you have so much information you can gather just in one piece. And
yeah.
If you do, like, I'm sure you guys do exactly what we do, you record everything you're doing.
Pretty much.
It's not just, you're just not recording rooms. Like, one of my guys, Dan, he rubber bands his digital recorder to his hat. So everything he says, he could listen back to later on.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, to me, he looks really funny doing it, but it's a great idea. Just because he always has that there. But
mm-hmm.
it's true, there's certain pieces of gear that there's no way you could do without. And I also, when people ask me, too, like, what would you say the best, you know, like, maybe even five things you could have on investigation, I always say recorders first, a good camera second,
mm-hmm.
Pencil and paper, because you need to write things down sometimes, too. What people forget to do, that I noticed, too, on investigations, I don't know about all other investigators, I'm not even assuming this might be, but people who talk to me about it sometimes forget to kind of make a kind of a plan or a blueprint of the investigation,
mm-hmm.
kind of so they know later on when they're going through their EVP work, they kind of know what room, you know, what happened in what room,
mm-hmm.
rather than saying, well, what room was that?
Yeah.
So,
well,
we always feel like that, too. Just even mapping something out is probably a great idea also.
I always like to, when we start a recording, I always like
to announce
everything, the time, the people present. If there's any type of sounds in the background, where you're at in the location is very important.
I always like
to note those things, so when I play it back, I do know where we were and all that fun stuff. Dom, let's take a quick break, though, okay? We got a lot.
Sure.
We're getting a lot out here. This is really great. There's a lot of information here. This is really cool. We'll take a quick break, though, guys. guys. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right. Boy, you sound really enthused, Bonnie.
Sorry.
She's reading the chat room.
Bonnie, we told you this is Disneyland, okay? And your Ghostly Talk.
And I'm Bonnie!
And your Ghostly Talk paranormal talk show host training guide, you're supposed to pretend this is Disneyland. So do that again with some feeling. Do it again.
I'm Bonnie.
All right.
All right.
Guys, we'll be right back.
I'm Michael Cremo, author of Forbidden Archaeology. My website is mcremo.com, mcremo.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and you can get your tickets at hauntedhate.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk with Scott L., Doug, and Will.
Mm-hmm.
Mouth sliders and buttons, oh my. This is Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott Allen.
And I'm Bonnie.
I need to make a retraction from earlier.
Retract away.
Well, I mentioned this a little while ago, actually. The EDP with Attitude seminar.
I did our
commercial stuff earlier in the week. I had to get it done early because of the trip and stuff we took this weekend. So I got it all done early, and I got an email yesterday from Rick saying it's being postponed right now. So that commercial we played earlier, disregard that, please. I couldn't get it out of the I didn't have any time to get it out of the playlist. So Rick, sorry if you're hearing this. I apologize. I'll correct that. But
it's been postponed to a weekend. Maybe we can go?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't get any other information except that it's been postponed right now. So we'll work that out with him, though. We're still going to have him on the show here pretty soon also to discuss that, amongst other things. So just so everybody knows, I retract that commercial.
You retracted
it? I retracted the commercial.
Well, it's actually a public service announcement because we don't have actual commercials.
Well, commercial.
You retract that PSA.
Why do you have to make it a stupid acronym, man?
Because I'm in computers.
You're right. That's a good point. Okay. So anyways... Doug, take it away, Doug.
Speaking of computers, it has nothing to do with computers, but speaking of computers, we're on the phone with Dom Valela of paranormal-nyc.com. He is the team leader for Paranormal Investigation of NYC. We're learning all about what they do and who they are and what they've been doing, which is like lots and lots of media, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Keith Olbermann, how was he?
Keith Olbermann, we didn't meet in person, but they did a whole big it was actually about a five-minute piece on us, which turned out to be really good. But I don't know if you're familiar with Keith Olbermann. He made fun of the whole thing at the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he was kind of like bashing everything because Keith Olbermann is just like that.
Right.
We knew that was going to happen, but at least the reporter who did it didn't bash us, and it turned out to be a very, very good piece.
Okay.
That, like I said, that was at the Willoughby House, which turned out to be a good piece. And the funny thing about it is the same day that MSNBC came there, Telemundo came there,
uh-huh,
not speaking any English. So we ran about a four-minute piece on Telemundo. I don't think anybody saw.
well, anybody up here saw, but, well, undoubtedly in New York and probably here in Detroit.
Yeah, it's around. I just, we didn't get any feedback from that. Usually we'll get some sort of feedback from it. With Telemundo, we didn't. But, you know, we did. We have a media page on our website now, so we put the Telemundo there anyway in case anybody wants to see it in Spanish. It's still an amusing thing. I don't understand what they're saying, but still fun. And that's another thing recently we did. We put up a media page with the little clip from The Late Show with David Letterman, with the MSNBC, with the Telemundo, with the Dayside. Also a link to, the Daily News, and a link to the Metro, which is a local New York newspaper.
Wow. You guys are all over.
What's your most, and you go out and about, you investigate with your team. You did mention you have some spooky stories that have shaken up your team.
Well, you mentioned one already. It sounds like.
The best one, I can't mention the name of the place because the guy refuses to give me permission to at least name the studio, but I can name it's a music studio in Long Island City, Queens, that we investigated a couple of years ago. And I had known, one of my investigators, Joe, actually worked at the studio for many years. And so I used to hang out there a lot. And every time I was there, I would always bring up to Joe how somebody should investigate this place because just odd things were happening. Well, it turns out that the original owner of the studio died of a brain tumor. He was cremated, and his ashes were sprinkled on the roof of the studio. This is the story they told. We confirmed it. We're not sure if the ashes were on the roof of the studio or within the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But after he died, another person took over the studio. The owner then also died of a drug overdose, and after he died, one of the employees I was working in the studio was living in the back room, and while he was sitting in the back room doing something he shouldn't have been doing, a book flew out of his bookshelf and hit him in the head.
Wow.
And scared the crap out of him where he ran out of the studio in his underwear.
Oh, no.
And so I interviewed him, which this is a really weird thing about this whole story. Everybody who witnessed something, like the first guy who owned the studio had a brain tumor, died. The second studio who took it over kind of felt the presence of the original owner. He also died. The third guy, the guy who got hit with the book, who also felt the presence, also died not long ago. So the good thing about it, though, I was able to interview him probably about 6 months before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the guy who got hit in the head with the book. But mm-hmm. then finally we convinced the owner after that to allow us in the studio. Because Joe said while he was there one night, a clock literally flew off the wall. Not fell off the wall, but flew and almost hit him.
Oh, my God.
And then people were always claiming that there are weird voices in the studio when the studio was closed. So what we did, the first time we did it, I think, was with MTV followed us the first time.
Mm.
Which, if you guys ever do an investigation with media, you kind of realize it's really, really hard to perform any really good investigation with media, especially MTV media right behind you.
We didn't
really accomplish much the first time.
Yeah.
So about 2 months later, we returned, and this time with just the team. And while there, all I do, I put a regular cassette recorder, not even a digital recorder, just a cassette recorder with a brand new tape that I opened in front of everybody into the cassette recorder. I put it in one of the rooms, one of the biggest recording studios. Now, remember, this is a recording studio, so it's a completely soundproof room that I'm putting this recorder in.
Yep.
We turned the power off, so none of the PA systems were on. There could have been any feedback. There wasn't any noise coming from outside. Put it in there, and I start asking a series of questions. As I'm asking a series of questions, I don't hear anything. The day after that, when I'm analyzing data, I'm listening back to it, and you hear me say, "Is anybody here? Would you like us to help you?" And a couple other questions, and then I asked, "What's your name?" And all of a sudden, you hear a child crying. And, I mean, that sends chills up your spine when you actually hear it, because you know it's a child crying. It can't be anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You hear it clear. I think we still have that on our website, but the only way to get it, I think it's on our investigations page under Roxy 2.
Okay.
And there might be an EVP of that voice. That so far has been one of the things that have stuck with me more than anything, because you know how sometimes you get EVPs, you kind of dig a little bit to hear what it really, really sounds like.
Yeah.
But other ones are perfectly clear, and the ones that are perfectly clear are the ones that stand out more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of those perfectly clear. I mean, lower volume, but you could tell it was a human voice, and you could tell it was a child.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was more research into the history of the studio. The only thing we did find out that prior to 1972, the music studio was a garment factory where women there would be making clothing. The only conclusion we could get to without any proof was it was possibly they used to bring their children to work with them.
Yeah.
That something possibly could have happened. But we have absolutely no proof of this because there's no records of anybody dying in that studio, including the two people who did die in that studio. So for some reason, there's no records at all, so we couldn't dig that far into it. But the actual audio recording itself, to me, was the most startling thing because you don't expect a child. I think when you go into a situation like this and you hear an EVP, I think you always kind of expect an adult voice.
Yeah, you're starting to hear like Keith Richards or something come through. I mean, that's what I would. yeah, man. I mean, you're going to hear something. You're not expecting a child's voice in a recording studio. It's more of an adult situation, obviously.
Right.
I know exactly what you're saying. that really is weird when you think about it.
Well, and another thing about this studio, and not that really unusual, but you actually hear music in the studio when the studio is closed and nobody's in there, which, you know, I think most investigators agree it's kind of residual, where it's getting absorbed into the walls of the studio, being played over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like music you could make out. It sounds like a bunch of gibberish, but you hear a very faint sound of music almost all the time.
Maybe that's not the best location for a studio.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, about the actual recordings that they make there. Do they ever hear anything out of place and have to do a retake not because of a musician's, like, mistake or a musician wants to try it again, but because
something just didn't sound right.
The equipment failed or the, otherwise reliable professional quality equipment fails or there's other noises on the recording. Has that happened during the daylight hour, the working hours of the studio?
Well, the thing about the studio, too, though, it was more of a rehearsal studio with recording capability, which means that there was, I think, CD recording in the room, so the rooms were mic'd up to record live,
mm-hmm.
but they were completely isolated from each other, so one wouldn't bleed into the other.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they had any masters themselves. I think it was more where the people who left, like the customers themselves, would have those recordings.
Oh, okay.
So the owners would never really know what were on those recordings if they were.
Oh, okay.
But they do, like, it has been where Joe has recorded just the studio with nobody in it, and you could hear a faint sound even on the recording. But again, people scrutinize that because they say it could have been something picked up from the cassette mechanism.
It could be a radio wave also possibly, too. I mean, they ground the heck out of places like that, but still, I've heard it happen before in studios.
And the thing about it, too, though, this is what when we purposely did in that investigation, we turned the circuit breakers off so we wouldn't have any bleed of any electricity.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we purposely didn't want anything because we felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a grounding issue, it's very easy to pick up a radio station.
Yeah, real easy.
And especially, I mean, through PA systems and any type of recording gear, amplifiers, they'll easily pick up radio stations.
Yep.
So we use every possibility to avoid something like that happening. But still, like I said, though, the frightening part was it's a child crying. It's not even it's depressing when you listen to it because you don't want to hear something like that. You don't ever want to hear a child. You always, like I said, I think we all expect it to be. No matter where you get it from, you always tend to hear, I think, an adult voice. Rarely does it come out as a child. And if it does, usually not crying.
No. We've heard other things with children also and other EVPs. But that, like you said, and I agree, that's the last place I would expect to hear something like that from. So it does kind of, that would grab me.
The last thing you want to hear is a child.
Well, yeah. I mean, you guys did do your research. You went back, but God knows what may have happened there. Who knows, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there could have anything could have happened there, and I mean, it may have not been all that positive, unfortunately. So that's an interesting interesting idea, let's just say.
And then we also had this investigation in Salisbury Mills, New York, this is almost 2 years ago we had this investigation, and when we're setting up our gear, the woman claimed that there were apparitions walking around her entire apartment. I mean, her entire house. It turns out, too, though, she lived right next door to a cemetery.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we never kind of feel like, well, just because of that, this place is going to be haunted. We tend to always go into something with the idea, well, nothing's haunted until it's proven to be haunted. So even though it was right by a cemetery, we didn't come to any pre-conclusions. We didn't want to think anything about the house till we got there.
Mm-hmm.
But while we were there, two of my investigators were on the third floor bedroom, and they heard something, and they turned around, and they saw a penny on the floor. They reached over, they picked up the penny, turned their backs, and as they were walking out of the room, they heard something else drop behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around again, and in the same exact spot as the penny, there's a little pin of a frog. So they pick the pin of the frog up, they come downstairs, and they tell me, Dom, this just happened upstairs. So, of course, I'm like, we got to record this. You know, let's go up there, we'll set up a camera, see what's going on in that bedroom.
Yeah.
So I set up the camera, I have two guys behind me, one setting up audio, and the other one's off to the side. So I'm the only people who were in the doorway were me and the one guy setting up audio, which was Joe. Joe was to my right. As I'm setting up my camera, I turn it on. I'm looking over at Joe just to make sure no one's in the shadows. And all of a sudden, this white figure I see not only in my monitor, but I see in my own eyes, I see a white shadow pass through me, walk into the room, walk all the way to the very end of the room, turn left, and disappear into the wall. I said, you hear me on the tape say, guys, did anybody else see that beside me? And nobody was paying attention to it. Maybe 10 seconds later, happens again. But as it's walking into the room, going straight, another figure comes out of the right wall and walks towards this, the other apparition. They both walk into the wall together and disappear. That we all witnessed. You hear me telling everybody behind me, jump up and down. I want to make sure it's not you doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you see all the shadows of everybody, but there's the difference. They were dark shadows of them jumping up and down behind me.
Uh-huh.
My shadow showed as a dark shadow. These were all light, not dark.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one that always completely threw us off. But again, it's one of those things that we know what we saw when we saw it. But every time we show that to everybody, people always say it was us. People will always say, well, it's just a shadow. But how often do you see a light shadow rather than a dark shadow?
Well, yeah, exactly.
So the lady was right. She's seeing these figures wandering around her house, and you saw it too.
And that was, I mean, to me, that was the most startling thing because, again, just because somebody reports they see apparitions doesn't mean they actually do. I'm sure there's been a lot of investigations you guys have performed that you know that there's a lot of people who believe they have a haunting, and by the time you're done there, it takes you maybe 15 minutes to realize there's something else going on in that house, and it's not paranormal.
Yeah, we said that earlier, as a matter of fact, on this show.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's, you guys might deal with the percentage that we do, too, though, but there's a good, I would say, 60% of people who call us, that are not experiencing paranormal activity that have specific other reasons for calling us.
Uh-huh.
I mean, either mentally ill was one, one of the bigger ones.
It happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much you guys are coming across this, but I notice a lot of teams are. But there's kind of that EMF pollution, where high EMF readings are making people kind of hallucinate once in a while. So people with high EMF readings next to their bed, to say a clock radio or something like that, will have a better chance of feeling that they're being touched or that there's somebody behind them.
Yeah.
I think there's two. There's Dr. Persinger, who did research on it. Lloyd Auerbach did a little bit of research on this also, about sometimes how high EMF readings can cause hallucinations.
Yes.
What's really interesting is when you have absolutely no high EMF readings and you still get people experiencing paranormal activity. That house I was telling you about in Salisbury Mills had extremely low EMF readings, nothing that we would even consider, nothing over one. So we could rule that out, too. And what we try to do also, too, though, we'll use a regular EMF detector, but we'll always double-check with a natural,
mm-hmm.
just to make sure that it's not just an electrical EMF reading. This is why certain ones that we go to are easier to detect than others. Recently, we had one in Midtown Manhattan where a woman was complaining that every time she laid in bed, she felt a presence in the room with her. When we checked her back wall where her headboard was up against, they were peaking our EMF detectors.
Wow.
Now, if you guys know about tri-field meters, they're extremely hard to peak.
Mm.
This thing was peaking a tri-field meter. We told her to move her bed to the other side of the room, and she said within the first night she saw a difference, and she keeps in contact with us for the last couple of weeks, and says so far for the past month and a half, she hasn't had that feeling while she was laying in bed. So, I mean, it's an unusual occurrence and does happen in a small percentage of the investigations we go on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I think it's something, too, though, I think all teams should kind of learn a little bit more about, too, though, so we, you know, none of us make the mistake of calling something paranormal when it's not.
When it's maybe natural, like you're saying.
I mean, exactly.
It may be very natural. Well, that's one thing that you mentioned. Also, I mean, and we kind of got into some numbers a little bit, but we mentioned, like, in one of our emails that you said, you know, 95% of all investigations are usually not paranormal. That's a high number right there.
That's an extremely high number.
I mean, we're talking about only 5%, according to your idea, that may be anomalous, let's say. Where'd you get 95% from? I'm just curious.
We got it from our own experience, because what we try to do is take in consideration of things that we cannot explain. Like, to say, the voice in the studio, and to say the white shadow that passed me, those will put into the category of being paranormal only because we're not sure what causes it.
Yeah.
Okay? So that'll be put there. But the majority of our investigations turn out to be something other than paranormal that we usually find. Yeah, a good example is, have you ever been on an investigation where somebody claims that they have cold spots and that they kind of get a weird feeling? But that's all they give you. They get a weird feeling and cold spots, and then you ask them, do you have drafts in your house? And they'll tell you no. And as soon as you walk into their house, you feel a million drafts.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good example of what I'm talking about. Like, because a person doesn't realize in their own house that they actually have a draft. So, of course, if you're going in there with a temperature gauge, you're going to find different temperatures around the house. But there's no way of saying that's paranormal when there's cracks in the window.
And that's not really their fault either. I mean, yeah, once you live in a place for so long, you're used to everything around there.
Exactly.
So you may not even think that they're drafts, it's just the regular climate of the house. But once somebody who's never been there before walks in, they're going to feel what is a draft probably. That's a really interesting idea.
Well, and also remember, too, though, this is another reason we come up with this number. We're a New York City-based organization, which means think about the way New York City is. When you're doing investigations in a city, a lot of people, when they hear strange noises, turns out to be their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
not something paranormal.
Yeah.
Once you eliminate that factor and you make them realize that it is their neighbors and you record it and you prove it to them, and then they turn around even and say, wow. We just had an investigation in the Bronx last week where a woman kept thinking that she saw a shadow in her bedroom. And she said it was really bothering her.
Mm.
When we were there, we noticed the shadow. We looked out our window, and 6 floors down, there was a bright light shining up through a tree into her window. So every time a wind passed, moved the tree, would affect the light and make this weird shadow on her wall.
Yeah.
She didn't even realize that was happening until we pointed it out to her. But this is what was having her paranoid.
Mm.
But there's a lot of people who do that. They get paranoid because it's something in their house they don't understand. Unfortunately, 95% of the cases we go on turn out to be something that can fairly easily be explained.
Well, that might be fortunately, actually, depending on the way you're looking at it.
Well, I mean, I think all of us want,
sure,
would like that to be reversed. I mean, sure you guys too, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love it if 95% of the investigations you got, you went on, you could not explain? That would be wonderful.
Well, if that was the case, we'd have everybody and their mother out ghost hunting then.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I think that if you're on the side of the folks who are experiencing this phenomena that they can't explain, right, and then they get it explained, they're probably pretty happy and have been helped, and now they can sleep at night, right? So
that's what it turns out to be, though. I think a lot of times when we go in there, we put their minds to rest a little bit that this is not something paranormal, and we'll just describe to them exactly how something is causing this reaction. So we give them reason to realize not to be afraid of this anymore, and we keep in touch with every investigation we've ever had, just in case something reoccurs. I mean, there's a couple investigations that we have to go back 3 or 4 times because the client keeps claiming something is going on, and every time we're there, we're not witnessing while it's happening, but we're not discrediting what the client is saying until we have a reason for it.
Mm.
I mean, it's true. You could walk into a house that has no drafts, no EMF readings, and still people are complaining about paranormal experiences. And if you keep going back there and you keep getting nothing and nothing and nothing and nothing, eventually you're kind of wondering what really is causing this.
Yeah.
But those are cases you leave open. I think right now when it comes to my cases, I would say probably about 10% of them are closed, which means we proved there was nothing paranormal, and we just close those.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's probably about 80% that will stay open until we come to a conclusion. And then there's the other 10 that we actually review constantly.
Yeah.
That we're always going back to try to find something. But we try to keep most of them open just in case something new happens.
Well, that's the way to do it, too.
And I think you're doing a fantastic job, but we've butt up against our hour now.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it flew, Dom. God, I mean, there's, you guys
this
are doing so much stuff.
Super fast hour. Dom Vallela, you are with Paranormal NYC. That's www.paranormal-nyc.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the American Association of Paranormal Research. You've been doing so much media and so many good things for people who need help. And keep looking for them ghosts and getting them on recording and video.
Yes, thank you
so much for having me
more
on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming on the show. Hang on the line
and
for one
we do
want
to meet you eventually.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Even if we have to find a conference in New York to go to, something.
We'll go out there.
We've got to figure out how to meet you.
Don't come to us, we'll come to you.
You guys said, too, though, in 2007 that there is a conference.
Yes.
Not far, right?
Not far.
That's the one. If you're going to meet me, that's probably where you will.
All right. Sounds great.
Excellent.
Dom, hang on the line. Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this.